morning, Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we're talking about war and stuff. I figured it'd be a good way to open the Faith Debate show this morning. Good morning, Vietnam! Remember that Robin Williams movie from like the, was that the 80s, 90s?
I don't know. Sorry.
You don't know the movie?
I apologize.
You guys don't know that movie? Oh, man.
I know who Robin Williams was.
You know,
we were barely alive then.
There are certain days when I feel older than others. This is one of the days I feel old. Holy schmoly, how do you not know Good Morning Vietnam?
I've heard that before.
I've heard the phrase, but I don't
know. Wow. He plays a DJ who's broadcasting to the troops in Vietnam, and he opens his morning show with Good Morning Vietnam, but it's a wartime kind of a movie.
Yeah.
So.
Huh. What's it called?
Good Morning Vietnam.
Oh, that makes sense.
How'd they come up with a title?
Yeah.
We made exactly 1 millimeter of progress on our topic of just wars last week.
Yeah, but so we're going to try to make a second millimeter of progress on this week's edition of the Faith Debate. I'm Troy Skinner. You just heard Daniel Rasby talking about the millimeters, and he's with the church that meets at Imran's house, and you can find them online at conqueredbylove.org. And David Forsey is a pastor in the area as well of a house church that that meets the different member families host on a rotisserie league system.
Southern Frederick County.
Southern Frederick County, basically, that's what you're going with now? You've downgraded from the greater Potomac region or
that's
whatever
right.
you were saying at one time. So anyway, last week we were talking about Israel a little bit, and it was my fault we got off to a very sloppy start, so we didn't get off to a good start out of the gate. And we tried to corral the discussion and get it more focused on just war theory, and to not have to relitigate any of that. Wouldn't take long if we did, because we didn't cover that much ground. But the three of us on the panel this week are all of the opinion that war is sometimes justified. The question is, like, under what circumstances would it be justified, and what would circumstances tell us that automatically that's not justified?
And how can it be waged in a justified manner? Are all methods of victory, of achieving victory, are they all justified? And I would say, no, they're not all justified. I just thought of a great example, probably of the civilian thing.
The civilian thing being whether or not it's okay to kill civilians.
Like Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. That was probably the most famous example of that, where there were many people that came to Truman and said, if you drop this bomb, 100,000 innocent people, which by the West standards, innocent people. In Japan, they wouldn't have considered themselves innocent if somebody were to convince the people of Japan at that time that the emperor was in the wrong, they would feel like, well, we're all to blame for that then, and so we should all die. That's how the Japanese would have felt that way. The West doesn't see that. They see them as they're non-combatants, they're women and children, therefore they're innocent. So Truman was told, well, you're going to have 100,000 innocent people die, or 1 million Americans die, and probably as many more, 1 million Japanese soldiers die. In a long, drawn-out invasion. So we got 2 million, probably, or 100,000 for certain, that are probably not combatants, and zero Americans. And he said, well, I'll take that. And at the same time, by the same token, we get to also prove to Russia that we're still powerful, because they were fighting with Stalin at that time, and the negotiating table trying to divvy up Germany. And so there was a lot of other stuff, but the specific argument about whether civilians is that justified just because 100,000 non-combatants, I mean, that's a lot of people, and you don't know for a fact that we would have had millions dead in an invasion of Japan, you know?
I mean, on the current trajectory, I think it was a fair play, because not only would, they probably saved untold many more times Japanese lives.
Even right. more innocent civilians, potentially.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, because of the fight-to-the-death mentality, the fight-to-the-last-man, fight-to-the-last-person mentality of the Japanese.
Now, there is a certain attractiveness to that, pragmatically speaking, right? If you can save, using your 2,100,000, think, if you can save 1.9 million lives, then, okay, let's do that. But, you know, 100,000 people died.
Right.
You know, explain it to their loved ones who didn't die, that, you know, it was an okay.
And those of you who are history buffs, you don't have to call in and tell me it was actually 123,964. I know it was over 100,000, but it wasn't millions, right?
Right.
So that's the point we're making.
Yeah, good catch, because we would get people hung up on that sort of minutia. I deal with them far too often. But anyway, it's like saying, you know, for the good of the many, this one must die.
Sure.
Right. Well. Okay, God,
which is what the high priest said,
right,
about Jesus.
And God orchestrated things in such a way that with Jesus, that worked out really well for us Christians, right? But he had unrighteous motives. The high priest had unrighteous motives in saying that. So,
I think you'd have to make an argument that pragmatism is never like a good way to make decisions.
And by the way, the Jesus example, we can't forget, theologically, his life wasn't taken from him. It was offered up, right? He gave himself up.
Right.
So we have to keep that in mind as well.
He said, I can just call down 12 legions of angels anytime and save myself if I want to.
I like that last week in the show, David was talking about the body. He was making a correlation between, like, he's responsible for what his body does, good or bad. And he was saying that, like, a country, a nation state is a whole bunch of people that represent a political body. And so if you use that example, then, I mean, it's okay to punch somebody in the stomach when you're in a fight with them, right? So killing the civilians is punching them in the stomach. They're not the combatants. They're not the fists that are flying.
Right.
So that gets to the point where there is no... I mean, there's this industrial complex that supports
the war. But it's also hopefully ending the conflict before, you know, one of the two people fighting dies, right? Like, how do I end this most quickly so that...
But I guess another analogy would be, then, is it okay to then capture the person, tie them up, and then cut them piece by piece, you know, and torture them, having already subdued them? And that would be the... What? I'm saying that would be the more extreme example of, okay, these are really not combatants. They've already surrendered. They're not, you know, now are you just going to kill every man, woman, and child in there, right? Because that has happened.
Okay.
And, you know, that happened, honestly, to some parts of Germany when the Allies finally broke through the lines. There was a lot of raping going on. There was a lot of killing going on. A lot of civilians died in Germany. Germany had already surrendered, right? And that is had not just happened October 7th. It did not just happen in end of Nazi Germany. It's happened all throughout history. When a country takes over another one, generally,
there are bad
after
actors.
Their surrender, basically, there's plenty of people that rape and pillage and plunder and basically totally destroy the area.
Yeah, there's bad actors.
Is that always unjustified, though? Because God did command similar things to be, not the raping, but he did command every man, woman, and child to be killed. And he also made provisions for future wars that presumably would be just, saying, if you go to war and then you take captives, now you're going to take all these women and children captive and make them your servants now. Okay? And that's one of the verses everybody jumps to.
And one of the reasons why, and I don't know if this could be a mistake saying this, but one of the reasons why last week I said, for this discussion, let's take ancient Israel off the table, because there's so many theological commitments, thoughts, whatever, that are packed into that, that are totally separate conversations, because I don't disagree with the history. I don't disagree with the God command aspect. I don't disagree with any of the stuff in the Old Testament. But as far as the purposes in that, the lessons that are to be learned from that, I don't agree with you on the multiple points you've brought up so far, and those would be separate shows.
Well, I realize that, but the problem is, I don't know that you can separate it, because if we're trying to decide when and how...
Well, I don't know that you can avoid separating it. So that's what I'm saying. That's a totally separate series of shows.
But if we're going to discuss how and why certain types of wars or parts of wars will be justified or unjustified, biblically speaking... There's no way to really do that adequately while throwing out half the Bible, and saying,
I disagree.
We'll
discuss that later. See, that's what I'm saying. It's a totally different. Totally disagree.
That's what I'm saying. But I don't think it's possible for me to have that kind of a conversation without.
So what you're saying is you would base your theory of just or unjust war
on the entire Bible and not just the New Testament. Yes.
Well, and you would base it on.
Likewise, I think all three of us would be there.
Yeah.
Well, but I would include all of the parts of the Bible in as examples, and that doesn't mean
I would too.
All.
But well, see, we don't disagree on that. It's how to apply what those examples mean for us. That's where the difference is going to be.
Right.
Okay. But that's still going to come up in the discussion, though. As far as to determine whether
this goes back to a question that David brought up last week when I don't know if he was just thinking out loud or if he was being playful or if he was thinking, hey, this is an avenue of discussion we should take, when he said, so basically, a war is justified if God commands it. Like if God doesn't command the war,
right,
then it's unjustified.
That would right? be
and
one that, argument.
And that's kind yeah. of, that would be the example if I wanted to be, you know, committed to the same kinds of arguments that you've put forward about, you know, in Israel and God commanded it. Okay, did God command Russia to invade Ukraine? Did God command the United States to, the colonies to rebel against England? Did God command the United States to wipe out all of the Indian nations across North America? Like I would argue, no, we don't have any record of him commanding that. So that would say that all war is completely unjustified except for the war that took place in ancient Israel.
Well, that would be the Anabaptist argument, but I'm not an Anabaptist.
Why not?
I don't,
right? That's the logical...
No, it doesn't follow that because this war was justified, therefore all other wars are unjustified unless the various circumstances that started this one exactly happen again. That's not a logical argument. It is entirely possible that there is another kind of war that is still justified, and some of the principles that we learned by viewing these other wars, knowing that they were justified, there may be some similarities between those wars and some other wars which might happen in the future, whether or not all of the circumstances are there, namely God commanding it, go do this now.
Yeah, so
even if all the circumstances are not there, then
we're going to have to say, you know, basic principles are, well, we can only go to war if we are wiping out an extremely wicked people, or we can only go to war if taking land right
I wouldn't even go that far. I would say that one of the reasons you could go to war is to wipe out a wicked people.
Okay.
Not you could only go to war to do that, because it's not a limiting principle. It just says this type specifically was godly, so. The Anabaptists would say you have to have all of those circumstances, and not just Anabaptists. I mean, you're not Anabaptist, but you subscribe to the same theory. You have to have every little circumstance, including God commanding it outright in the beginning, in order for it to match and be an analogous conflict today. And I don't think so. I think certain principles of why some of these wars were justified and why God commanded to do certain things, that we should draw on those same principles when we're deciding these current conflicts of whether we think they're justified. So I know you're trying to get us away from the topic of ancient Israel. I just don't know how I can, in my mind, separate those things from this whole discussion.
Well, maybe helpful for me, what's going on, the picture that we're given in the Old Testament of the life experience of ancient Israel is pointing forward to what's going to happen in the eschaton at the end of time. So God wipes out the evil and places his people in the promised land. That's the Old Testament. Guess what? God wipes out the evil people and places his people in the forever promised land in glory. Mm-hmm. So one is anticipating the other, and that's the lessons to be drawn from that. So God can kill whoever he wants because he created. He's the potter.
God
the potter can do whatever he wants with the pot that he made. So if God's going to wipe people out through supernatural occurrences at the end of the age, okay, God can do that. If God wants to wipe out those evil Canaanites using the adult men of his chosen people as his instruments, okay, God can do that. So that's where, to me, I can see a delineation there that doesn't automatically make the ancient Israel experience something that's automatically applied across the board. This is similar to the theonomy kind of discussions we had, right? Like, how far do we take the examples that were given about ancient Israel and apply them now? And my view on theonomy is, I guess, the same as it is with just war theory, which is there are principles to be drawn, but we can't be too exacting because we're not ancient Israel. So we can't take the ancient Israel rules and apply them to us, but we can take principles and lessons that are learned from that.
And I don't know that our leaders would want to even take that example, because they don't want to be held to that kind of standard. Look at what happened with Achan. One guy did a bad thing and stole a little piece of jewelry or whatever, and a gold nugget, a robe, or there was like three things, right, he stole. Mm-hmm. And because of that, Israel lost the next battle, and like 30 or something of their people died, which was a lot, because compared to zero in all the battles combined, you know, 30 people was a lot of deaths, right? That one guy caused not only the battle to be lost, the whole army demoralized and all that. Imagine if that was the case. The U.S. military, one member of the military commits some heinous act, and therefore we start losing all of our wars in the Middle East and Europe and Asia and stuff. I don't think our Western leaders want to have that kind of level of responsibility, but you were kind of, David, you were kind of hinting at they really should. I mean, the country is responsible for the actions of its people,
sure,
towards others. And so that is a very, very high standard.
It's kind of a federal headship argument, right? Like the leaders, we're with them until we're not. And that's kind of what happened with the American Revolution and other revolutions too, is like, we're not with the leaders anymore. We're gonna have our own new set of leaders. That would be a difference, by the way. There weren't a bunch of random skirmishes. Well, there were a few, but it wasn't
leading up to.
It wasn't largely just this disorganized, everybody's vigilante justice trying to throw off the king.
Right.
They created their own government, if you will, their own set of leaders who drafted their own documents, their own petition They were cognizant of the fact that it's important to try to identify the lanes and stay in them. They mm-hmm. weren't just off scattershot.
Yeah. And it was all they were British sanctioned governments, because it would be very it would be like today, like the president says, all right, these are my pet states, and all the other states are gonna serve them, and all the other states say, no, I don't think so. You're not acting as a protector of us anymore.
Well, you mean like sanctuary states or sanctuary states?
Well, I'm just saying it as an example. It would be
cities where people who aren't citizens are allowed to vote in their elections, like that kind of example.
Oh, that doesn't exist in this country, Troy. you've been reading too many of those right wing conspiracy theories.
it'd be pretty easy for any given state to say, if they wanted to, like, the federal government isn't protecting us anymore, so we're not going to listen to them. And that's all the colonies did.
That's what happened. That's what happened in the Civil War, and they lost the argument. But it was founded, I think, on the same principles. Like, okay, we just don't want to be part of this part of it anymore, but we still have the rest of the government.
And the Civil War raises. I was looking for an opportunity to pivot to this, and that you brought the Civil War, and that's a perfect example.
It was not about slavery, by the way.
Yeah. Well. I will say that it wasn't solely about slavery. I think it was in part about slavery. But yeah, making it as simple as that, and it might not even have been primarily about slavery.
I think today, back then, there were a lot of different political things to play at the same time.
But North versus South, the blue versus the gray, was a lot of Christian versus Christian.
Yeah. So many battles, in fact, people found literal brothers, like their actual brother, not just cousin, like brother on the other side of the battle.
So that's a difference with ancient Israel, too, by the way. Right? It's God's people attacking clearly the enemy. But in the wars we have now, like if we got drafted into the military and we had to go fight against England again, I mean, we would probably be shooting at some... Professing at least, and perhaps, in fact, right? So you have
look at the current Ukraine and Russian war. There are many Russian soldiers that I would say are probably saved. I don't know how many, may not be very many, the thousands or hundreds, but there's certainly some. And I'm sure there are people in Ukraine that are also saved. So there are actual Christians shooting at each other in Ukraine and Russia. Or there were when this was being recorded, anyway. You guys remember, we record these shows several months ahead, so a lot of the geopolitical things that we're talking about are going to be kind of dated, but we're intending these principles to be timeless, because God is timeless.
Except for the discussion about ancient Israel.
It'll be more dated. It'll be more dated in a few months than it is now.
So, I sometimes when things get really complicated, complex, there's all this gray area, you can't figure out what's what, sometimes it's good to just try to make it hyper simple. So a way to
it's kind of dangerous. We said that last week.
A way to try to make this hyper simple is that, you know, God says murder is wrong. Murder is a sin. So under what circumstances would engaging in a war be an unjustified killing, would be the kind of killing that we would say is murderous?
And because, to be clear, the Bible does not say that all killing is sinful, only that murder is sinful.
Right.
Right, because there are plenty of times to kill somebody, and most notably being when the government does so in response to a crime.
And it doesn't say anything specifically about I can't, in certain circumstances, kill a Christian. Let's say David loses his mind someday, and for whatever reason, he invades my home, and my life is and my family's life is in jeopardy. I'm like, you know what? I don't know what's going on with you right now, but I got to put you down. Right?
Or die, right? Those are the two options.
And then you find out, like, oh, he was a Christian brother. Like, well, that really stinks, but it wasn't a murder, right? You can kill someone and not have it be a murder, but you can't kill anybody, Christian or not, if it's a murder.
And so, many of the people in the Civil War, they may personally not have chosen to go shoot other people on the other side, but they were commanded to do so by their government. And they could do that, or they could desert and be caught and killed as well. And I don't know that the Bible calls us to do that necessarily. Again, there are plenty of pacifist Christians who would disagree with us, and we don't really have representation from a true pacifist in this room, so we're trying to kind of make their arguments for them. But they would say, no, you should just desert then, or willingly be killed instead of firing any shots. But I don't know that Romans 13 quite goes with that. I think, and like you said, David, the example of John the Baptist, of what his command was to the soldiers. So I don't know. I mean, there were certainly principles and people. There were also many Christians who were actually desiring to fight on both sides because they believed their cause was just and righteous, in the Civil War especially. We can make an argument of how many people in the North actually believed they were fighting to free slaves. Certainly by the end of the war, some of them did. After the Emancipation Proclamation, it became more overtly about slaves. And many people in the South would have other Christian reasons that they would use, and you can decide if they're justified or not, but they would say that, there was interference by the North on a lot of different levels that were not justified. So, I don't know, but your feelings about whether a war is just does not make it just, because God does not change. So either it's just or it's not, right? But let's pull it back even further, make it more simple. University of Alabama plays the University of Georgia in a football match, and fans of both sides pray to God for their team's victory. Now what does God do? That's a kind of silly question, but people do that. I mean, you've probably met people who pray for their team to win. If I'm going to pray during a football game, I'll pray for people not to get injured. That's, I think, something that both guys can kind of agree on. And I think it's kind of silly to pray for your team to win a football game. But I don't really know where I'm going with that, except that that feels like a good analogy, just without the bloodshed. In that football game, neither side is particularly justified or not justified. It's a game, right? They're not actually killing people. But
anytime somebody dies in a war, it's some form of a homicide, right? A person has died, it's a homicide. The question is it a justified homicide or is it a murder? And I guess that's what it comes for me. That's what it's beginning to boil down to with war. Was the killing a justified killing? So if the Chinese Red Army invades Maryland tomorrow, and all the good old boys with their rifles and their shotguns and stuff rally, and they start taking shots at the Chinese army, and they kill a few of the Chinese soldiers. Well, they're defending their homeland, they're defending their families, they're defending their heritage, right? So, but the Chinese who came over here unprovoked to start shooting at the Marylanders, well, they're murdering people. So they're entering, so maybe it's, like, there can be one war and one side, or multiple versions of sides, are fighting an unjust war, and the other side is fighting a just war. This gets to a question you asked at the very, very beginning of this discussion last week, too, right? Whether it's a defensive war or an offensive war. Mm-hmm. But Daniel made the point about it being there's all sorts of battles of conquest and taking over more territory. And
but, yeah, and also to say, like, in defense of who, right? Like is it am I just to defend, you know, my neighbor's daughter from her abusive father, right? Like, is that just, like, that's not my house, that's not my fight, he's not attacking me, right?
Yeah.
But do I put myself in the middle of that? Like, is that the right thing to do? Is that the right thing for nations to do?
And we're going to stay on this general topic, but begin to pivot into something a little more on the personal side. That's a good transitional kind of way to end this show in next week's episode. So that was David Forcey with the good finishing thought. Lots of good thoughts in the middle of it all was Daniel Razvi. I'm Troy Skinner. You can find us online at WFMD.com and householdoffaithinchrist.com. We will continue this conversation next week, 167 and a half hours from, let me check, yep, right about now. God bless.